Beethoven Violin Concerto in D Major, Opus 61, 1806, Lecture 4.
We return to Beethoven's Violin Concerto in D, Opus 61 of 1806. We've worked our way through the monumental first movement, long and very challenging from every point of view, from the violinistic point of view, from the orchestral point of view, and especially for the audience to figure out what Beethoven's doing. I trust we have a grip on what's going on in that first movement now. Now, I would tell you that in most performances, the first movement of this concerto will run between 24 and 26 minutes in length. That's very, very long. And Beethoven, more than anyone, is aware of both its length and the challenging nature of it for performer and audience member alike. So Beethoven is going to pull his punches slightly in the second and third movements. They're marvelous movements, they're beautiful, but they are clear-cut in terms of formal structure and easy to take in terms of the harmonic material. So it's not that Beethoven is pulling back, but he's giving us in the second movement the lyric respite we desperately need, and in the third movement an almost comic enjoyment of our musical life without pushing us to the edge the way he has in the first movement. And I don't know about you, but I'm grateful. I've frankly had enough dark food. It's time for a little coffee, dessert, and maybe a little brandy afterwards. And that's what we get. All right, movement two is in theme and variations form, for the most part, with a couple of wrinkles, which we'll get into in a moment. Now, the way a theme and variations form movement works is this. A theme is stated, and then each subsequent section of the piece represents a variation of that theme. Now, if the variations get to the point where we no longer recognize the theme, if we no longer perceive them as variations, it's not theme and variations form anymore. So theme and variations form, by definition, requires that a composer stay close enough to the theme that we, as listeners, can follow how they dress and redress that theme by changing the accompaniment, changing, in this case, instrumentation, altering the tempo or the loudness, but not altering the theme to the point of unrecognizability. That will not happen, or it will rarely happen. Beethoven goes pretty straight ahead. He presents a theme to us and then gives us four variations of that theme. The first three happen all in a row, and I'll get into them at greater depth in a couple of minutes. But then Beethoven, being the person he is, can't stand it anymore. After this third variation, he thinks, you know, my goodness, I've done the same thing three times in a row. I've stated a theme, I've varied it, I've changed the instrumentation, I've put the violin virtually in the stratosphere of its range, which will let Mr. Clement once again stun the audience with his amazing high register work. Please remember that on a violin, when you are playing very high, you're playing on an E string. An E string is a very thin and tightly stretched string that's hard to press down without sticking grooves garrote-like through your finger. On top of that, when you're playing very high on the E string, the area that you've got to change pitches, you're very high up on the neck, almost with your finger in your face, and each infinitesimally small distance you cover by pressing that string against the fingerboard changes the pitch tremendously. So very high register playing is really hard. It's micro distances, and then somehow you've got to stay in tune. Please remember, a violin is not a guitar. It has no frets. There's nothing to stick your finger on that tells you this note, this note. It's all by feel, and it's all by ear. So this stratospheric upper register stuff is incredibly hard to pull off. It's incredibly hard to play in tune, and it is much harder to do than something that might seem much fancier and notier, but is frankly easier for the hand and easier to play in tune, easier on the ear. So we must be aware of that. Anyway, back to Mr. Beethoven. Despite all of the marvelous inventiveness and gorgeous lyricism of these variations, by the time he finishes variation three, he says, I've got to do something different. I cannot keep doing the same thing, even if what I'm doing is really nice. And so he kind of breaks faith with the form momentarily. He gives us a little interlude, a recitative, an almost operatic dialogue from the solo violin, quietly accompanied by an almost chamber-like orchestra. And then something that almost sounds like a new theme. It is not nearly as memorable or lyric as the theme we're about to hear, but lovely it is.